everyone, and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 165. This week, we are going to go into Avengers Endgame. We're going to be full of spoilers, so in case you haven't watched yet, just head back when you have seen the movie and maybe seen it multiple times, like some of us here. Who is here? Well, let's see. We have Pete here with me.
Hello there.
We have Movie Guy 365, Mr. Adam. How are you?
Good.
And of course, we have Miss Courtney. How are you, my dear?
I'm well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. So let's see. Pete and I have seen it twice. How many times have you guys seen it?
Twice.
All right. Two times all around. This is almost the end of, what are we at? Phase four? Whatever.
Whatever you want to call it. I forget what phase exactly it is, but this is, yeah, this actually isn't the end of this phase of Marvel. It actually, on paper, ends with Homecoming. I'm sorry, Far Away Home. Far Away From Home. Far From Home. Whatever Spider-Man 2 is called.
There you go.
I got Fly there away. Eventually. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I don't know what they're doing with it. No, that is actually the end of this Marvel phase, which, you know what, previously it was an Ant-Man film, so this kind of is par for the course.
But this was the ultimate ending to what we have now known as the Avengers, and we're going to give all our thoughts about this movie, how it impacts the greater MCU, what we'd like to maybe see for the future, and some of the teary moments, some of the happy moments, some of the laughy moments, all the good stuff that we're going to talk about from Endgame. So we'll just get right into it.
Can we say, like, look, from the get-go, it's spoilers. Like, we're not going to go into a spoiler section.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
That's what I'm
because,
sure.
Yeah, like, there's no way to talk about this movie without talking spoilers. There's no way to, you know, I mean, obviously, it's highly recommended. Right now, I think the IMDb rating is 9.1. So, like, it's highly rated. Everybody obviously wouldn't have seen it twice if they didn't like it. So I think that speaks for itself. So we're just going to go right into it. So as soon as you watch the movie, come join us. We're going to talk all about it now. And then, yeah, obviously, spoilers from here on out. All right. From here on out.
Spoilers.
How are we going to do this? I guess we'll just give our overall thoughts of stuff, and then, like, as little things come up, we can talk more about it. Because I don't know how else to really approach this movie. There was so much going on with it. Obviously, you know, we had Infinity War. A lot of people in between Infinity War and Endgame may have not seen a couple of the films. I don't know how pertinent they were. I think they were good to see, but I know that they weren't, like, things that maybe necessarily, like, you would, like, get lost on. Like, some people didn't see Captain Marvel. I think that it lent some of those moments a little bit more weight, but I didn't think you missed out on anything per se.
More plot-wise, strangely, it's Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, Ant-Man and Wasp was the big one.
But legitimately, you could watch the last 20 minutes of Ant-Man and the Wasp and you're okay.
I also think they did a good job of, like, catching people up in case you, like, missed anything. Like, he basically lays out everything that happened in that film.
Yeah,
like,
they almost re-explained all the Power Stones.
Yeah, that too.
Which first happened in Guardians of the Galaxy when they met the Collector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was our first, like, and now let me tell you about these stones.
Yeah, they had a tiny blurb in Thor: The Dark World when Odin was when they were talking about the stones, but it didn't go into a depth like they did in Guardians.
Yeah, his was kind of like this is what the ether, like, started as kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the films went on, they got more and more explanations.
Yeah, he was definitely Stone's exposition was Guardians of the Galaxy. They went into and gave you, like, visuals of each one.
Yep,
so, you know, you just, like, okay, this is where we are.
Yeah. And obviously, leaving off from Infinity War, everybody knew that what happened in Infinity War wasn't going to be 100% permanent. But this one really kind of went into, all right, how permanent is permanent and what will change, what can change, what did change. So overall, Adam, what'd you think of the movie?
You guys know how much I've been looking forward to this one, and I was emotionally exhausted by the time this was finished. I absolutely loved it. I really can't put into words how much I did, but it's still sinking in several days later. I'm more than satisfied with what they gave us.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Like, everything is still sinking in, but yeah, I definitely think satisfied is a good word. Courtney, how about you?
I feel the same way. I I was super excited for this, and it didn't let me down at all. The second viewing was very helpful, kind of unwound some of the questions that I had. And like Adam, I was completely exhausted. I was exhausted both times. I was more exhausted after watching it the second time, honestly. But yeah, I loved it.
Awesome. Pete?
So up front, Infinity War hasn't really aged very well with me, even though it's not very old. There is just something about it that feels a bit plodding, and the lack of Cap, Black Widow, and Hawkeye, I think, really impact my overall enjoyment of what's titled as an Avengers movie. It's a phenomenal Thanos movie. So I was looking forward to Endgame more so because it lent you to believe this would actually be an Avengers movie. This was the most satisfying movie I've seen in the Marvel Universe. And that was the word I used when I first... I do think that that's the most apt word, is satisfying, because on every thread, I feel that we came to a conclusion that was logical. Well, there's one that we'll talk about. Why am I acting like there's spoilers?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just realized, I was like, wait, what am I doing? There is a conversation to be had about Black Widow.
Okay, yeah.
I think that the moment in the film plays extremely well. But they did kind of underuse her. And I think that it shows up more because she's so effective in this movie when she's given time. She's so phenomenal in Winter Soldier, you know, in her relationship with Cap. And, you know, her not being basic. She has like almost two lines in Infinity War. And I think that that is detrimental to the character and to the film itself. But beyond that, it just is smart. The action is well paced. It's a long movie, but the dialogue is important. It is character building. I just really was very impressed. It's my favorite Avengers movie by a few country miles. It's kind of not close.
Yeah, I'll definitely give it that. I really enjoyed how they tied up the, you know, original Avengers storylines, like how they went from, okay, this was the group that you kind of have grown with, but like, here are the new guys and here's how they play a part. And I couldn't help but think about, especially the second time watching it through, like in Infinity War, you had the group, they were broken up, you only had so many of them there, like you were definitely missing Ant-Man, obviously you're missing Captain Marvel, you were missing like components where it was like, oh, but like, look at what, you know, even in Scott Lang's, like, you know, I guess innocence, or, you know, he's so unaware of everything that's been going on with the Avengers. But like, just that outside perspective, what he then brings to the group was clearly needed. And it was just kind of like, and I understand like how Infinity War was a Thanos movie and whatever, but it feels like because they didn't have all the components there, like that's why they couldn't, you know, necessarily succeed in the way that they wanted to, like because like they were just having certain people and then certain people weren't where they needed to be, like you were splitting them up and stuff. Like I feel like if you put everybody together, which is what you did with Endgame, then that's when you have success. You know, so I really enjoyed Endgame.
I just want to be clear. I think Infinity War is good. I enjoy Infinity War.
Yeah.
But when I put the two films up next to each other, I don't see any reason to watch Infinity War anymore. I just don't. I want to, but they made an incredible Thanos movie. And to make a villain, which has been a Achilles heel in the Marvel Universe, as effective, as sort of sympathetic and understandable as they frame Thanos to be, is very difficult.
Yeah.
So for what it does it extremely well. Just for what, I don't know why. It just feels like a lot of, none of this will matter in a couple of minutes, and you all know that, but let's try to make it as emotional as possible. Where then the stuff that actually mattered and is emotional, which all happens in Endgame, massively effective.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about like what does matter, because we get, you know, everybody as soon as Infinity War was over was like, okay, well, they're just going to use the Time Stone and undo it. And I loved how that wasn't the solution. Like the solution wasn't just let's get this one thing and, you know, do away with it and like we're done. Like, so I love.
But it was sort of a Time Stone.
No, it was a time heist.
It was a time heist.
But I liked how it wasn't just a simple, very straightforward thing. And I loved how they tackled that idea of time travel. Obviously, Marvel's whole big thing with alternate, you know, timelines and universes is a whole thing. So I like how they kind of were very careful in what they did to not have 500 different, you know, different versions. Or did they? I don't know. We could talk about that for sure.
Chris Claremont is just like smiling and, you know, twiddling his fingers together.
I like Infinity War for, like, the jokes. Obviously, like, there are certain pairings that we got in Infinity War that were just brilliant. Like, the Thor-Rocket-Groot pairing I loved. When Tony Stark and Doctor Strange finally meet, like, that was just hysterical. And, like, while you still got laughs in Endgame, I feel like Infinity War was, like, the jokes and Endgame was, like, the depth. I don't know.
I think that's fair. I mean, the gravity of Endgame, as much jokes as we had in there and as great as Fat Thor was, like, it was still tons and tons of gravity. So it reads like you said, overall.
May I say something?
Yes.
Also, the jokes are funnier in Endgame. You want to know why? Because they actually use movie titles when they refer to movie titles. And not just say that time travel movie from 1980. They just say Back to the Future.
You're never going to let this go.
It's because it's bad. Because it's bad in Infinity War. And
well, that's the thing. The joke was fine.
Yeah.
The joke was fine in Civil War, but they went right for the same joke in Infinity War.
Yeah. And then in this one, everyone tells that joke. But there are specific examples. And at first, my brain was like, are they just naming Fox movies? But then I remembered, oh, no, Back to the Future is Universal. I thought that would have been like a weird way of going about it. But
well, they didn't even need to like say Back to the Future in this one, though. I mean, they could have just said the joke.
Yeah.
And the people that got it. That I think that would have been more effective. But they did go out and like fully say Back to the Future. It wasn't necessary.
Yes, it is. I totally disagree. That's the thing. Like, because that's what you would do. You would say, are you talking about Back to the Future? You wouldn't say, are you talking about that time travel movie from the mid-80s? That would never be in a conversation with me and you.
I just don't think either thing needs to be said because we could both say something about, you know, making
the
joke.
But I think it was really important in this movie to get the audience, because mentally we do think of those movies when you think of time travel.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard not to because there's no rules on time travel and it changes every time. Mm-hmm. If you want to watch Primer and lose your mind, like, you should check out Primer. But I thought that was really important to actually call out that and say, put all of that aside. Like, Looper does that also, which is a time travel movie where, you know, the character of Bruce Willis legitimately says, we're not going to get into this because we're going to start drawing diagrams and it's going to be insane. Just follow along. You know?
Yeah. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I want to make a go back just a second and kind of defend Infinity War for, you know, what we got in Endgame. So Civil War, our group is completely splintered. Mm-hmm. Okay. Infinity War, they're still splintered.
Yeah.
And we would not have that huge payoff at the end of Endgame if it wasn't for those two movies. If the team was still together in Infinity War, it wouldn't have been as effective in Endgame.
I'm not arguing that they should have been together, though.
No, I agree.
That's the thing. I 100% agree with you. Like, there's a reason that they're separated.
Right.
But there is an unbalance in one half of that breakoff. Almost a little too much for me. Because you have to use up so much time with Thanos that Cap, Hawkeye being gone, but in particular, Cap and Widow are in the movie, but really kind of not in the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, once again, it is because it's told from the perspective of Thanos. And it's his movie. It's not
told from the perspective of Thanos because there are scenes where Thanos isn't in it.
But they're focused on him and his journey and more of like that whole, you know, group that's following him more so than like
And that's fine, but unfortunately for me as a watcher, I felt that it really cut out the whole Wakanda piece.
Yeah
Like it really feels like just like, and meanwhile in Washington DC you know, and it's
there's that transition, but I think it still works. But I can see what you're saying about the transition.
It's
of those
unnecessarily unfortunately unnecessary. Yeah, because you had to build Thanos, because none of that matters if you don't care about Thanos.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Anyways, Endgame.
Yeah, but Endgame made you already knew. And, like, I really thought it was interesting how, you know, they, quote-unquote, took care of Thanos, like, very quickly in the movie. And then, like, when they hit that 5 years later, I think everybody in our theater was like, oh, like, what? Like, just a big, confused, like, wait, what are we doing?
Well, to follow up on Adam's point, you know, one of the things that is absolutely there, because it has to be in Infinity War, is if they're all together, this isn't an issue.
Yeah.
Or you could say, like, adding in Captain Marvel obviously is a big thing. Mm-hmm. But if they were all together and they all work together, Thanos probably doesn't get past step three. But it's because they're broken. They open the door for him.
Yeah. 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 And then, you know, so we see that in Endgame. And I think that the whole line of, like, you know, certain, especially Captain America, like, can't move past certain things. Like, Tony, he's moved past, but then as soon as that thing is introduced to him again, like, it immediately is something that's on his head. So, like, you know that, like, he will never be able to stop thinking about these things, you know?
Yeah, I was also just thank everyone who wrote it that they did not turn Pepper Potts into something that a lot of movies turn the superhero's wife or girlfriend into. I was really worried that during that fireside scene when he's like, I figured it out, that she was going to say, Tony, look at what we have. You can't go back and do this.
Yeah,
because they kind of had her do that in Infinity War. And I was like, oh, that doesn't feel like what she would do to him. You know, because she's been so supportive, even though, like, she understands it's almost a mania with him.
Yeah.
But I was very happy that she was actually sort of the one who said, if you don't do this, what was it? He was like, I got to go to bed.
Yeah, she's like,
you won't be able to rest.
Yeah.
And then that comes in at the end, which that is the type of writing that just sends me off happy. That type of payoff when a character has a line like that, and then later that final line is, you can rest.
I think that got me the second time, like, even more so, because, like, you just knew, like, you know, and, like, obviously he couldn't rest, because even before Cap and everybody came to him, he was still building a suit for her. Like, he was never gonna let certain things go. Like, why did she need a suit? Like, the big bad was done. Like, nothing was, you know, imminently in, you know, threatening them. But it was like he just could not let that stuff go. I thought that was really, you know, an interesting thing in his character. And I think that that makes it, like, why his character was the one at the end, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and it's also, like, the culmination of the whole thing. I mean, and the fact that they used I am Iron Man, like, it was the right thing. Like, it was just the right thing the whole time.
Yeah.
That had to be the way that it ended in my mind always. And I'm just glad that it did end that way, and that it was super effective. I wept the first time. I wept harder today. Like, it was just very, very effective for me. I was super happy with that.
I got serious Logan vibes at the end of when he was sitting there.
God, it just kind of, Logan, I'll start crying right now. Dude, Logan gets me so harsh.
When Doc Strange held up his finger, like, that was just like the, oh, no.
I also loved that Jon Favreau had that little moment with his daughter at the end, because I think that was important to acknowledge that Jon Favreau started it, and, like, he's been, you know, a part of it since the beginning of this.
Well, also, this, if anyone doesn't remember, when Tony gets back from Iron Man, when he was stuck in the desert and kept captive, he's like, what are you hungry? He's like, yeah, I want a cheeseburger.
Right.
And they go and get cheeseburgers. And then he's eating a cheeseburger at the press conference.
On the stage. Yeah.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
And not only, like, that scene works so well, because, again, there's two moments in this movie, one a comedic moment and this one in particular, that body language adds so much to the moment. When the girl says cheeseburger, watch Favreau.
Mm. Yeah,
He kind of, like, half turns his head and, like, has a little bit of a smile.
Yeah.
And that's what makes that moment hit so well, because more than likely you in the audience, if you recognize that, you did the same thing.
Yeah.
And then the other moment is one we'll get to. Yeah. And that has to do with Cap's ass.
Yes.
Because, yeah, all right, well, I have a list.
I know. So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
All right. So, okay. Well, I don't know. You want to help with the list or like, Adam, did you want to say something else? I feel like you were going to say something.
No. I'll go off you guys in the list. So.
All right. So there are some things that I think are really important. You know what? I want to get some fun things out of the way. Just some fun little things that I noticed in the movie. I'm sure most of you noticed this as well. If you didn't, then let's have some fun. There's two in particular. As you know, most movies, what's the number? 39? It was once written that there are like 39 stories, and every story derived from it is just a different variation on those. That's okay. You know, something that George Lucas always preaches. And so when you watch these movies, you will undoubtedly find something that refers to something else, whether it is on purpose, it is subconscious by the person who wrote it. Anyways, so the first one, really the main one, because there's really only two that really stuck out to me. The first one is when we get to the end and Sam is talking to Cap, mm-hmm. old Cap. And we're going to get into Cap's arc, later down the line. But when he is talking to him, and I mean, I saw the ring the moment he grabbed the shield because I was looking for it.
Yeah.
Because if anyone's listened to this show for this and during Film Basement years, I've always said and I've always wanted that this thing ends with that dance. So you knew he wasn't coming back. When they said he'll be back in 5 seconds,
I was like, no.
Oh God, he's not going to. It's going to happen. So anyways, he notices the ring, and Sam says, I forget specifically what
the line. He says, you want to tell me about her?
You want to tell me about her? And Cap just says, no.
No. I don't think I will.
Yeah.
In Private Ryan, after they meet up with Matt Damon and they're waiting for the Germans to show up in that small town, Matt Damon and Tom Hanks are sitting together, and Tom Hanks makes a reference to a story about his wife and some rose bushes. Then Matt Damon goes into a whole story about the last night that he was together with his brothers. And then after he's done, and like he kind of has like a sobering moment because he's like, it's the last time that we went out, you know, before we all deployed. He turns to Hanks and he's like, you want to tell me about your wife and those rose bushes? And Hanks pauses for a moment and says, no, that one I keep for myself. And that's that moment.
That is that moment.
It's almost the same exact shot angle-wise when you look at Tom Hanks and Captain and Steve Rogers. Mm. So I thought that was really something, like to find. And also, it's a World War II movie, for crying out loud. Like it was a real line right there. The other thing is just a fun little thing. If you're a Star Trek fan, the last movie with all the crew is The Undiscovered Country, and the credits are everyone's real signature being written up on the stars as it goes away. And I think that they absolutely took a cue from that, the way that we see this go out, even though some of those people are still going to be in movies. Whatever. Sure. We'll figure that out later. Maybe they won't be. Who knows? Maybe the Avengers, as we know them, all of them, will never be in a feature film again. It's very, very possible, because there ain't many left of them that are leaders, quote unquote. You know what I mean? So that makes sense to me. Anyways. Oh, another thing just want to talk about. Storytelling. Thanos. Let's talk about Thanos just for a moment, because then we want to talk about the heroes.
Yeah.
What's really, really done well in this is let's think about Thanos. But specifically, I want you to think about Thanos in the post-credit sequences, the first 3 or 4 times that we met him. What is he doing? Does anyone remember, like, actively what Thanos is doing?
He's usually sitting somewhere.
It was a joke. It was like, is Thanos in the throne? Like, that's all he's doing. And all he's ever doing is telling other people, get me the stones, you know, Josh Brolin style. And over time, through the course of the movies, he learns and comes to the realization, I got to do this myself. So he literally stands up and says, I'll do it myself. And that's when he wins, because he does it himself. This Thanos that we have in this movie, though, is not that Thanos, because it is years before that. He has not learned that lesson. So he bombs the Avengers complex when they finally do the first snap that brings everyone back. And then what does he do? He comes out, he meets up with Nebula, and he says, bring me the stones. And she says, what are you going to do? Just sit here.
Yeah, he's like, I'll wait.
And if he doesn't do that, if he just goes and gets it himself, he's definitely killing Hawkeye and getting that. And that's it. He wins. So the time travel not only worked as a narrative way to get everything back into normal, they paid attention to it in a character way. Mm-hmm. That it's the character flaw of Thanos before the events that we've been watching for the last decade that actually undoes him.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was really fun. Really like it. Let's talk about, though, the two characters. All these movies have, like, MVPs, right? You kind of feel like Civil War, Black Panther was the MVP, right? Anyone want to argue that it's Thor and Nebula here?
No, those are the two in this movie that I absolutely love the most. They have the most development and the most, like, I guess development's the best word for it. That, like, I connected with, like, on so many levels. I loved how Nebula's been consistently, like, growing. Like, ever since Valiant Guardians 2, like, she's just, like, grown so much and become such a, you know, more important part of everything. And I loved how even in this one, like, while there were times that she hung back, like, she was never either afraid to speak up and be like, nope, this is, like, what I know, which is, like, also, like, just in terms of storytelling, I hate when, like, characters know something and, like, never tell the other group. So, like, I'm glad that, like, that wasn't a thing here. But, like, just the fact that they were able to show her and then directly contrast her to, like, the original Nebula. Yeah, the original Nebula we knew. To be like, look how far you've come and look how far, like, you've learned to love your sister, work with, you know, other people, get away from your father's teachings, like, all this stuff. So
she could have said also, allow myself to introduce myself. And they'd be like, you know, from that comedy movie in the 90s? Was it the 90s?
I don't know that movie.
Are we that old? What?
Oh,
you
Jesus.
Know Austin Powers.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Do you need
I
to
like
know
the
Austin
opening
Powers?
Scene with her and Tony with the football.
Yeah. Oh my, yeah. I want to talk about that. Like how that opening scene, I felt more for Tony and that dynamic between those two more than any other Tony arc, honestly, in the entire MCU. Look how frail he was.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was just like, you get that beginning and the tenderness Nebula was showing.
Yes.
That went 100 miles for her development. And well, the way, and then when he comes back and he's just angry. And from all the time that you can go back on this show and all the times I said, oh my God, Tony's just like his own worst enemy. I actually reversed my entire, you know, position on that because, you know, he's saying, oh, well, you remember, you know, I wanted to suit around the world because we couldn't have that because it impacted our freedoms and everything. And I just felt that. Like, that was amazing just to me. Like, I love that opening with him.
Yeah, because also, like, you knew, like, you had seen the vision that he had seen. So, like, you understood, like, how he was feeling. Like, it's as if, you know, you have this visceral feeling where you're like, no, you shouldn't do something. And, like, you're trying to convey that to somebody and they just don't get it. They blow it off, you know? So, like, you understood, like, his frustration in that moment and his, like, he felt, you know, he saw that failure that they were going to do. And then they had it and it was just so visceral. Like, you just connected with him in that moment of like, I told you and I tried to tell you and you didn't listen to me.
Well, I think in the opening scene, Courtney, let me know if you agree with this. I think actually the biggest thing that happened is very small. Nebula wins and doesn't get punished or feel pain because of it. And the expression on her face of surprise to A, being told you won. Great game.
And it wasn't like cheating or anything like that.
Puts his hand out and shakes her hand. And Tony probably doesn't understand the impact of that action.
Mm-hmm.
But for Nebula, it's massive because of, you know, how we've learned from Nebula. She, without
Gamora?
Yeah, without Gamora recognizing it, like every time that she bested Nebula, it meant torture.
Right.
You know, and we learn that in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I believe they really get into that conversation.
Yeah.
So I think that it's really that you can bring the turnaround moment, you can bring it to that exact second. At least that's the way I felt.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I think.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I think that's totally fair. Me and Melissa are just talking at the exact same time. It's cool, guys. I think that's totally fair to see, you know, like, that's where the turnaround happened. Because you can see it happen through the course of just that tiny game they're playing, too. Because she starts out in the defensive, mm-hmm. because that's, like, her natural state of being. And then at the end, she's like, I'm going to shake your hand. Good game. You know, you just kind of see it happen. But I had kind of a complaint about this part of the movie too, though. He was up there 22 days, right? 22 days, is that the right amount
really
of time?
Really gets emaciated over 22
really
days.
Really emaciated. Yeah. However, that is problematic to me. At the same time, I think that played in favor of what Adam was saying with how much you felt all that stuff that happens once he gets back to headquarters. Yeah. Like, I think you really feel it so much more because you see his ribs and you see how tiny and frail he is. So it's a problem, but it is also helpful.
Infection also might have something to do with it. I mean, we are talking about something like that. Who knows?
He had infection, but also they said it bought them more time. So I don't know if it bought them 22 more days because they had some time and then they had more time. I thought there was a 40 something thrown around. I don't know.
They originally had enough fuel, or they charged the ship enough for 40 days, but then something broke and they were dead in the water.
Oh, okay. I thought they had 48 hours of flight time.
No, 48 days, I think. Was it 48 hours? All right, you might be right.
48 hours of flight time once they fixed it, the fuel cells.
It could have been a little clearer, or maybe it was, and we are just not remembering it correctly, on exactly how long they were. There wasn't a thing that came up and said, day six or whatever.
No, it should have been. No, I was just going to say with Nebula, I also love that part in the ship where I think it was at a point where they were running out of stuff and she just pushed the food to Tony. No, you need this. I'm mostly robot. So go ahead.
I'm also going to take a stab in the dark and say that the pose that Tony was in when she goes to move him when he's lying on the ground, I don't know why, but a lot of people like doing this. I don't know why they like doing this, but that's going to be some sort of Renaissance painting of the pose that he's in because it seemed very purposeful. I don't know what it would be, but if I've learned anything from watching movies, that's a thing.
I immediately went to Castaway with Tom Hanks laying down on the raft. That's kind of how I drew the comparison a little bit, because same thing. He's really thin and he's just almost given up and, that kind of thing. I don't know if that's any connection, but that's what I pulled.
Yeah, I didn't pull any specific connection, but yeah, I liked it. And I loved, as soon as the bright light started shining on his face, I was like, yes! I was so happy. But did anybody else have anything on Nebula or anything?
I'm looking forward to seeing her go forward. But I think that her going forward ties into the other person that I think has shown to have the biggest arc over the series of this Marvel, and that's Thor.
Yeah.
Because, guys, your James Gunn directed Guardians of the Galaxy 3, it's Thor's in it.
I'm so freaking excited.
I mean, how ridiculously exciting is that?
So many levels.
There's so much to look forward to and all that, and I understand that, and I'm really looking forward to finding out the movies that we don't know about.
Yeah.
Like those characters that they haven't said, hey, we're doing this, because we know that they're going to be doing X, Y, and Z. Mm. But I don't care. It's going to be tough to top my excitement for a James Gunn-led Guardians finale movie. I'm assuming it's a finale. With Thor in tow.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously attractive. That
because
movie
it also,
is just
like,
great.
It builds on the relationships that had initiated in Infinity War. Him and Tree and Rabbit. having those three together again is great. And then the conflict that he has with Star-Lord, I think, is hysterical. That whole end back and forth with them, the look in Thor's eye, the last you're in charge. The way that he looks at him, it's so small, but it's so good.
But
he does a triple take. The first time he looks at him, he's like, oh yeah, you're in charge. And then the second time, it changes each time. For the third time, he's like, no, I'm definitely in charge.
It's like Pootie Man.
Also, I just love the stare. He's like, yeah, you're in charge.
Comedy MVP goes to Mantis with that. Knives.
He's knives.
That made me laugh more than I thought that, just this little thing would go.
Even Drax's straight, while he's eating, of course.
No, see, Drax's hell. Perfect. Of course, you should battle for control of the ship. That's exactly what he would say in that moment, without thinking seconds about it. So can we talk about Thor?
Yeah, let's talk about Thor.
You want to dress up like Thor? I'll dress up like Thor. It's incredible.
I want to dress up like Thor.
Thor has I will argue the largest, most complex arc of anyone in these films. And I've enjoyed it thoroughly. I am actually a massive fan of Thor 1. I think it's incredibly similar in tone to Richard Donner's Superman. Dark World 2 is still not very good, but damned if that didn't become one of the most important movies in the last 10 years.
If that's the big takeaway from Endgame, is they legitimized Dark World.
Yeah, which is super crazy. And also,
Dark Elves, you're scary.
And also blatantly obvious that Natalie Portman did not have time on her schedule to film new footage. So either way, so you know, we've seen Thor be the cocky person who shouldn't be king, the kingly leader, and then sort of the rascal who loses his swagger and now has realized that he's not really any of those things, but he might be a mix of them, and he has to find it out on his, you know, he has to find it out.
Yeah.
And I know that there are a lot of really, I would say, dumb people in the world who'd be like, oh, they just had to make a woman in charge of Asgard. You know some fool said that out there. But him leaving Asgard makes 1,000% sense right now.
I mean, even in the other movies, like, he never really stayed in Asgard.
Because it's not really what he wants to do.
And it's not what he's like. But I don't even think that's what he's like meant to do, because he was always like the warrior, like from like what I got from the movies, like he was always the one to go out and protect, you know. So
he has
like
much more to protect than Asgard. That's like, it's like Marvel, when Captain Marvel is like, there's a lot of planets in this galaxy and not all of them have you. So I gotta be a lot of places. I can't just sit here. And I think that's Thor.
Yeah,
you know, so there is something to be said about getting those two characters on screen and both learning a little bit from the other.
And him being a guardian of the galaxy, because he
needs
to
guard... guardian of the galaxy.
Yes, he needs to guard
Please
everything.
Please title it. Go ahead, just title it that.
Yeah, I think we'd all be in for it.
Yeah.
Courtney, what are your thoughts on Thor?
I've got a lot of thoughts on Thor. Well, first off, I just want to say, I think the funniest thing he did in this whole movie, which he did a ton of funny things, but I think the funniest line he delivered was when he was talking to his mom, and she's like saying, you're from the future, and he goes, you're right, I totally am from the future. I laughed so hard both times, because he delivers that line so freaking brilliantly.
Yes.
I don't care if I see Chris Hemsworth do any action ever again. Like, I just want him to be funny. Yes. Like, that's all I want from him for all of life. I was not expecting him to be Fat Thor. I was not at all. That's the last thing I expected.
And I love that they kept it the whole time. They didn't do some like transformation, like, oh, he's skinny and muscular again. Like, they kept it the whole time.
I thought that he was going to call down the thunder and like melt himself into abs. And all I could think of was, could you imagine if they did this to Black Widow?
Yeah.
Why is it suddenly not funny? What if Black Widow was like, yeah, I've been eating PB&Js for 5 years, guys?
No.
Well,
she wouldn't, though, because like she
I know,
has,
she
like,
wouldn't, because that's
she'd
not
be
her
like,
character.
I'm going to still train.
I know. Like, that's not her character. But I really his character's so good.
Yeah.
And Hemsworth is, like Courtney was saying, I think they learned with Hemsworth and with the character itself, because they introduce him as the action guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that they learned through, you know, the smaller interviews and this and that, and his appearance in some other things, and in particular, like that funny little Marvel short that they did with the roommate or whatever it was the first time. Like, oh, wow, this guy's really funny. Yeah. And then Ragnarok was like, yeah. He's actually hysterical, and we're going to let him be hysterical and entertaining.
Yeah.
But they've worked it into a plausible, workable character that you still think can lay waste to the enemy.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do.
Yeah, I have to admit, though, during the first viewing, it kind of bothered me a bit, especially when he was doing when they got him out of his house and they brought him to Avengers compound. Those scenes kind of bugged me a little bit. I won't lie. They were just like, oh God, like they're really just wrecking him here. And then, but then, you know, when I saw it again, knowing full well what happens at the end, it kind of worked a little bit better, but I think they could have cut out some of those scenes at the compound. They just didn't work for me.
I think it just goes to show you how much of rock bottom he hit, because like his whole like drive and goal, like for all the movies, was like he's supposed to be this big warrior and he's supposed to defeat the big bad, and like he did in the very beginning of the movie. He went for the head, he defeated him, but it was useless. It was for nothing. Like, you know, so like if you go and say, okay, your whole purpose in life is now not, like, what are you gonna do? You know? So like he just went into straight depression and like he just didn't do anything. So like I think that was a really strong way to show like, look at all the emotional ruin he's in, and then the only thing that actually finally saves him is him talking to his mom. And I loved her so much. The line where she was like, I was raised by witches. I see more than just with my eyes. Like, it was just such a mom line. Like, I know you. I raised you. Like, I carried you. Like, I know my son. Like, it was so perfect.
Eat a salad.
Yeah, yes. Beat me to it.
Yeah, Rene Russo is just golden. She really is. I agree with Adam, though. There was the final thing when Rocket was like, snap out of it. We got to do this. And then he runs away. I was like, okay, one more time, and I'm going to get a little tired of this.
Yeah.
But then they bring in the Frigga scene right there. But that was my absolute limit, because I was like, all right, we get it. But we also, 3 hours isn't as long as everyone thinks it is, and we got to start, you know, let's start, you know, getting this guy to a better place, even if it's just the path to a better place.
I think we also just need to acknowledge that Chris Hemsworth as Thor looks good with any kind of hair.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what it looks like.
Yeah.
Once it's all, as long as it's not like greasy and he's not wearing like a poncho and a sweatshirt, like once he's past that point and is Thor again.
I was wearing a hoodie. I mean.
Yeah.
But
he was.
Did everybody notice at the funeral he had the black homeless man gloves, the fingerless gloves?
No.
I didn't see them.
Oh. That was my favorite. Like, why are you still in these fingerless gloves?
Actually, this movie also, I was very annoyed with Infinity War when they magically fixed his eye, you know, because I was like, ugh. But this movie actually validates everything that happened in Ragnarok, because the Thor-Hulk relationship is very vital to here.
Yeah.
Obviously, the entire, like, Thor's attitude is very vital here. The end of the movie is vital here. And Hulk is eating his Ben and Jerry's flavor, which was, Infinity War, though, that we got that?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So anyways, I thought that was funny, just to throw away that I was like, oh, well, Hulk is eating his own Ben and Jerry's. But I feel that this movie embraced the best, second best non-Avengers movie. In the thing a lot better than the first one did as well.
Yeah. All right, I guess that's our Thor.
I mean, Hulk's arc is also something to go on, but we'll go into that another time and whatnot, because I think we're going to
I just think Hulk is great, because like they actually finally, you know, gave him the best of both worlds, you know? So like, and they showed you that, you know, you don't have to be physically strong to be the strongest Avenger. You don't have to be mentally strong. You know, intelligent to be the smartest, you know, everybody can help out. And I think that was like just a great way to be like, you know.
Well, I think that they learned the same lesson that they learned with Thor, where it's like, oh, he doesn't have to just be brooding all the time. Like, he can be fun.
And like Banner, like once he learned to accept himself, like every part of himself, which includes the Hulk, like that's when he was at peace. And like that's the lesson that he tried to bring to Thor. Like, when you just learn to love every bit about you, even your failures or whatever, like you can be.
Which you can argue, if you watch the Incredible Hulk, the one with Ed Norton, he sort of achieves that at the end of that movie, and then it just sort of never really mattered.
Yeah.
But that's fine. Like, we understand. Like, that's whatever. That's said and done.
Yeah.
You know what, though? There is. Should we talk about Cap? We can talk about Cap.
I was waiting for you to talk about at least just like that moment that you got really excited about.
I mean, as anyone who reads the books, you were waiting for that hammer to wind up in Cap's hands. And as that whole fight scene was cooking, I was like, oh God, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I knew it. Like, you just smell it coming.
They lingered on that shot of the hammer.
Yeah.
Just a millisecond too long.
And you were like, all right, here it comes, yeah, here it comes. So that was incredibly satisfying. But they also did what I thought was going to do, where I was like, well, it's too early, so it's not going to be the thing that ends the day. That was fine. But even more so than that, finally getting the Avengers assemble, which was teased at the end of Age of Ultron, where he just yells Avengers and then it cuts to black.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I actually clapped my hands, but not because, like, I was like, hooray! It was to channel my energy in some way, because it meant that much to me to finally see that moment happen.
Yeah.
And what a moment it was. It really was.
There were so many moments in that fight that were great. Like, you know, first you got like the Thor dual wielding, which I loved. Then you got Cap wielding the hammer and the shield, which was amazing. And then, I mean, I got to talk about not only Scarlet Witch and her whole, you know, thing with Thanos. Like, I thought that was brilliant. I loved the look in her face when he was like, I don't even know you. And she's like, you will. Like, it was just such a good moment. Like, you could just feel her hatred towards him. And, like, you know, again, you have these very powerful characters who in certain instances could be too powerful, but, like, you know, they knew that she could do just enough. Like, she broke his weapon. It was just enough, you know, but she didn't destroy him. And then, like...
Well, she would have, though, if he wouldn't have fired on his own troops and stuff,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
And that was, like...
Which is good. Like, that's a great way of dealing with that. And
it shows her strength, but, like, you know, his also desperation of, I'll sacrifice anything as long as I don't die.
But if it was her alone, that fight ended right then.
And then the other fight... I think one of the best ones that I was looking forward to was the Captain Marvel Thanos fight. And the only reason that didn't go Captain Marvel's way was because of the Power Stone. But when he headbutted her and didn't make an impact, and she just smiled and he, like, looked really worried, that was perfect.
It was. It actually reminded me of the only moment that's worth remembering, really, in Batman vs. Superman. When Superman was weakened by the kryptonite and the punches were effective, but then there's that sequence when Batman is hitting him and they slowly, like, do nothing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it reminded me of. But I think they did a very good job in balancing Captain Marvel's power surge here as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've said it a million times before, there's no way that character can be the one who ends this movie in this battle.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that, and I'm very happy. But they also showed how immensely powerful she was, but smartly got her off the playing field because there was other things she had to do. And then when she is taken out for the finale, which belongs to Tony, she's hit square in the jaw with a Power Stone. I mean, most people would have just exploded and died, you know. So it's okay that she got concussed basically from that. But Courtney, can I ask you something?
Please.
Are you having any issues with her apparent lack of much personality so far, Carol Danvers?
Well, I definitely am. I had some issues with Captain Marvel with the movie. We talked about that.
Yeah.
She shows up here and, like, Thor's like, I like her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but why? She doesn't really do anything. She shows up and she hits people. And, like, that's fine and everything. And we know she's really powerful. But in terms of, like you said, personality, I don't feel like I know much about her or have much emotional attachment to her at all.
Yeah.
Melissa pointed out, though, there was one moment of personality. And it made me think, like, oh, there we are.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it?
Yeah, like, well, I like the whole Thor thing because she didn't flinch. That's why he liked her. Like, I like that. But the whole, like, when they're in the whole battle with Thanos and, you know, Peter Parker has the thing and she just goes over to him and is like, I think you have something for me. And he was just like, I'm Peter. And she's like, hi, you want to give it to me? Like, it was just very, like...
she says this, she's like, hi, Peter Parker.
Yeah. She's like, yeah. You got something for me?
That's the thing. Like, so her... Adam, let me know if you disagree or agree with this, because I know that you love the Cap as much as I do. she has the same moral base and the same straightforward driven attitude as Cap has, but with, and you know, like, she's unwavering. Like, she's never going to be like Tony, where it's like, well, what if I do something highly questionable, or maybe we don't, you know, something like that. But Cap, we have this emotional attachment to, with the relationships that we know of him, with Bucky, with Peggy primarily, with his clashing attitude with Tony. Who is going to be that person for Captain Marvel who's going to drag that personality out her? Because I don't see it being Doc. I don't see it being Black Panther. It might be Doc Strange, because if I had to take a guess, the new triumphant. That's it.
Are we in Rome?
Would be Marvel, Panther, and Strange, possibly.
But who
do you think becomes her? You know, who drags out more of a personality in that character? Because I think they dropped the ball in the first movie, and I don't think she doesn't really have a chance to do it in this one. Which, look, 95% of the people on screen don't have a chance to do it, because then the movie would be 5 hours and you'd be focusing on characters that are not vital to the story ending. So it makes sense.
Right.
But where do you think that we go in the future that gives Carol and gives Brie Larson, an amazing actress, a little more to do than to stand with her shoulders squared and punch people?
That's kind of the weird thing. Like, I'm not sure how they can, because they've even established in this movie, she says, not every planet has Avengers. I have to be everywhere. I don't see her sticking around on Earth. You know, that would kind of go against what she just said in the movie.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, like, and then now you have like a void. You still have that void. Like, I know Feige has said, no, she's supposed to be one of the leaders going forward. But she's already said in this movie, she's not, you know, she's not going to be on Earth.
Unfortunately, so. I don't think that line lends to what's going to happen in the future, because
right. There
is a very, very big reason that she's standing at the top of Tony's stairs during the funeral by herself.
Yeah.
It's because she is going to be the one who's leading those people next.
Well, do you think now that there's like a gap now that there is no Captain America, there is no Iron Man, there's no leaders, like, now does she see like, oh, well, maybe I do have to spend a little bit more time on Earth?
It might be. Yeah, it very well might be. And also the good thing would be just, which is unfortunate because I love the cosmic stuff, but the threat has to come to Earth when she's there so she doesn't leave Earth.
Yeah.
And or, you know, the threat starts at Earth and then works their way outwards. Because they are going to have now Captain Marvel, you know, a character of that power fighting alongside, you know, Black Panther, who, while Black Panther is, you know, strong and he's got the suit and all that, there's really kind of no comparison. So the foe that would give Panther a hiccup is not even, this is the Superman paradox. You know, we're at the Superman paradox.
Hmm.
And Doc Strange is your Batman, your overly kind of rude person who is like, well, look, this is how we have to do things, and you're going to have to understand that. And she could be the Superman to that. That's the only thing I could see going on.
Hmm.
I mean, Batman is in, like, attitude wise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but let me just ask. This is kind of a broad question, but
broads.
Does anybody really think Cap, Iron Man are off the board forever? I'm not talking about the actors. I'm talking about the characters.
Well, no, because I mean the character of Captain America was given a shield at the end of this movie,
right?
No, I know, but like I don't even see that as being a permanent stick. I think at some point, Cap. You know, because it's just like in the comics. Like, yes, he gives a shield to other characters off and on, keeps things fresh, keeps things moving. But it always comes back to Steve Rogers and Iron Man. It always comes back to Stark.
No, I think that's done. I think Stark is done.
I'd be shocked. I would be shocked.
My thing with Steve is he went back in time and he spent a lifetime with the woman who's running S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm pretty sure the two of them punch people in the face on a mission somewhere in between that. It must have come up once. There's a thing to be told about Cap's tale.
Yeah.
Like, when he drops off all of these things, all of them, whatever, he drops them off, he's Cap, he's awesome at it. I want to see him drop off that Soul Stone.
Yeah.
Because the dude who's kind of protecting the Soul Stone, that might be a conversation I want to hear. Now, Cap knows he's there because Hawkeye told the story mostly off camera, but like Cap knows that Skull is there. Okay, that's established now. But he has to go back there. And then how exactly does that work?
Well, the Russos actually did say after Infinity War that once the stone was taken, Red Skull was free. Like, he could go. So he's not there anymore. Now, what happens when he drops the stone back off, I don't know. Because it's not like, you know, a point in time where, okay, it went back into, you know, each, you know, like the Ancient One got it when it left, blah, blah, blah. But this was taken the same way as it was taken in Infinity War. So it's not like you can, you know, just drop it back off in the deposit box. You know, I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, I don't know if you just, like, drop it off the cliff that you drop the soul that you trade in for it.
Or is it something, because I know in the comics, like, there's people who are trapped in the Soul Stone, and there's, like, a whole bunch of things, like, with that. So,
they,
like,
hinted at it with Gamora, but if we're going to find anything out about that, there is, I mean, they are supposedly making a Black Widow movie. It's supposed to start shooting this summer.
That's going to be a prequel, though, right?
Yeah, but that's, then who cares? I think that's, it's almost a disservice to the character.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need a prequel on Black Widow. I just don't need that.
Yeah.
But then you're entering a Black Widow movie with cosmic elements. That's kind of a weird thing. You know, she's a spy. She's a assassin. All of a sudden now, oh, we're going to ignore all that and just have, like, a cosmic tale with the Black Widow.
You could do cosmic assassin stuff in space. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be just Earth-related. Like,
So maybe do we just sort of look at this and we'll go, you know what? We screwed up. We missed this opportunity.
What do you mean?
Just don't bother making a Black Widow movie then.
That's kind of how I feel. If I'm being honest, that's kind of how I feel. And I would, like, I want a girl movie. Like, obviously I want a girl movie, but at this point it feels like an afterthought. If they're just going to kill her off and then make the movie, it feels like an afterthought. It's doing a disservice to the character.
And for me, I don't really care about boy-girl movie. I wanted a Natasha Romanoff movie.
Yeah.
Because of all the people that were introduced, and especially when we saw the tone that was introduced with Winter Soldier, that is obviously my favorite. I was like, oh man, there's such a gap to be filled right here with a Black Widow film that doesn't star any other people from these movies.
Yeah.
I think they missed the window on that.
They missed the window. And now they're going to, like, go back and do a prequel and...
If that's what they do, we don't even really know. I mean, like,
I know
that's what we're all thinking because of how Endgame was, but, like, we don't know. They might, do we even know who's set to direct or write or anything?
Yeah, Variety and Deadline. Variety and Deadline are not rags. Like, when they report news like that, it's because there is some real substantial thing to it. Rachel Weisz Rachel Weisz was set to be part of the cast. There were a number of casting reports, and again, not from garbage bloggers, from actual movie sites that have informants, and they actually are trade magazines, online magazines, basically. So I don't know what you do there, but I love the way that scene played out.
Yeah,
but I was like, okay, yes, this is great. Like, I really do like this, the way that it went. But it made me think, oh, like, I feel like you kind of botched the ball on Black Widow 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Or whenever Iron Man 2 was, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, when you didn't actually give her own things long before all this, I think, was the miss. I mean, I don't know. It's an odd thing also to announce a Black Widow movie when, like, also we get a Hawkeye TV show. Like, there's now a lot of TV shows for Disney Plus where it's like, oh, okay, like, this is interesting. Like there's a Loki one. Like, Loki now can be at any time because
he's back in play.
Yeah, he's in play now.
My shocked face.
I'm still pissed off. I'm honestly pissed off that Loki didn't come back. Like, that to me, that was like a come back.
Yeah, he did come back.
He did.
When he took the Tesseract.
Took the Tesseract. That's it.
He went into a portal. Like, he's not dead.
Well, yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, like, it.
Did I miss this entirely?
This is, like, where I think we are going to have some weird timelines. Because, yeah, like, Cap went back, but, like, there was another Captain America doing all that other stuff. So, like, now there must be some alternate stuff. But then, yeah, after the Battle of New York, when they were trying to get the Tesseract, and it falls out, Loki picks it up and goes into a portal.
Yeah, I did see that. I guess I just didn't take it that way.
So the thing is, like, that Loki, this Loki that you know of, because remember, the movie says, like, your present is your present. It doesn't matter what happened in the future. So he never gets to that future, so he's not dead.
Yeah, so now there's another Loki around.
So now, if I was to pitch to you Loki Time Lord.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there you go. There's your series. There's your series. Because
it's bigger on the inside.
Because you're going to follow him through all of his adventures of getting into trouble everywhere across the galaxy and across time. Because that's what he's going to do, because he's Loki. So you're going to get Loki, you know, Dr. Loki, whatever you want to call it.
Ooh, Dr. Loki would be a good cosplay.
Look, they did that. Actually, in the comics, they kind of turned Silver Surfer for a little while into a Doctor Who type character. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're taking a bit of a cue off of that, and they are going to use Loki in the same sort of way for the show. So, yeah. One of the things that I found very... I mean, God, I feel like we're talking about... There's so much to talk about that happens because of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the film itself, I feel that we've talked about a fair amount. But man, no Vision at all. I guess he is just, he's one of those characters that, like, he's done, that's the end of that story. But again, there's a TV show coming out, and it's a prequel, I guess.
I guess, unless,
and I don't know,
like,
this prequel thing to me is gross. Interest me very much.
I wonder how much prequel it's going to be. But, like, unless, like, he was rebuilt and Pepper gives him to...
I don't know. I always assumed it was going to be the 2 weeks or whatever that they were together, that kind of thing. But now they're saying, oh, it's going to take place in the 50s. I'm like, what?
In the 50s?
Who said that?
Apparently, I think Olsen said it in an interview. She said that I guess they asked her at the premiere, and she said that the story people told her that there were going to be portions of it set in the 50s. So
sure, comic books, folks.
Like back when Cap and Peggy were together.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. I guess this will be like the big thing for D23. Like they'll be able to actually now announce their next slate of films and/or what actually is gonna be behind the TV shows. Because August is D23 Expo, October is New York Comic Con. I know in the past Marvel has had a big presence at New York Comic Con. That's where they did a lot with the Marvel Netflix shows. So I'm really interested to see, because of Endgame, now what's next, you know? Because I really enjoy where all these characters are after this movie, and I'm really interested to see them in the future.
Something just again towards Endgame. I know that we were highlighting like so many of like the big pop moments.
Mm-hmm.
None of it matters without the dialogue that sets this stuff up and the actions of the films that we've been watching for the last 10 years. Look, I'll never believe that they had a roadmap on this forever and they knew like exactly where. But man, oh man, did they really thread the needle on hitting and making previous movies like feel important. The elevator, let's actually go into this really quick. The elevator thing. So the elevator scene, you know, reenacting pretty much the setup of Winter Soldier is, that was just hot for me, like as a watcher. But for Marvel to then also have him whisper Hail Hydra, which for people who don't read the comics, it doesn't even matter. That's still a great moment. Like, that's a great callback because he knows all these people are crooked.
Yeah.
So that works out really good. But the thing is, in the comics, there's a story where Cap says Hail Hydra is part of Hydra. And because fans are people, they couldn't wait for the actual story to be told. And they're like, oh, you've ruined Cap. You made him a bad guy. And it's like, just watch when the thing goes. Just watch the movie. Just, you know,
just read the story.
Yeah, wait for the stories to come out, you fool. And for them to throw in that Hail Hydra thing in a very other way. Like, there are ways you can watch this movie to someone and they wouldn't know that Cap wasn't saying that for that specific reason, you know? So I thought that was absolutely phenomenal. I was really a big fan of that.
Yeah, there were a lot of little pieces of the movie that were really great. I loved when Doc Strange says to Wong, you brought them all, and Wong's like, I brought everyone. Like, he's just like incredulous, like, yeah, everyone's here, how many more did you want? Like, we got the entire continent like we got the entire Wakanda army and everybody else, all of our what are they called? Sorcerers.
Yeah, the whole magic team. We will be taken seriously.
Yeah.
Team magic.
Tony and his father was a really special scene.
Yeah.
That was really something, and John Slattery has really fit into that role extremely well, and I thought that was one of the best scenes. It does make you think. So, Tony, actually, if anyone can explain this to me, Tony says, I don't know why I know this, but I know that they're there at the same time. Is it because, like, he's born the very next day? Because he tells Cap an exact date. And I forget what it was. It was like 04071970 or something like that. I want to find out what the Marvel MCU birth date is of Tony Stark. Because I have a feeling that it's like the day before his birth. Or and that's why he remembers it or something like that. Like, or...
Because he does ask. He's like, how far along is she? And he's like, meh.
Or is it because later in life, does Howard Stark make a connection when he sees his son at, like, whatever he was in Civil War? I don't think he does. Like, that's asking a lot of a person to remember of a rando that they met on an airbase.
Yeah.
But does he ever put together that he met his son?
Didn't he? No, he died when Tony was young, didn't he?
He died when he was a teenager.
Yeah,
it's,
so like,
it's in Civil War. That's, you know.
Well, he was more than a teenager. He was.
Yeah, he was what, like mid 20s?
He was in college. Yeah, he was in college.
So, I mean, the face is there. Like, it's clearly that dude.
Yeah.
So, in the same way that, like, Frigga knew it was Thor, he obviously doesn't know at that point. But is there ever a point later in life where Howard Stark.
Like, as he's seeing his kids grow up, it's like, look like that guy I met.
Makes a little bit of a connection towards it. I don't know. That's probably a big reach. But I just really enjoyed that scene. I thought, again, it's those moments that make other things matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps a thing going for 10 years. Not fan pop moments.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not unreasonable to think what you're thinking because of that whole scene in Iron Man 2 during the film reel, you know, when he's talking to future Tony.
Man, you know what? That's a good call. That's a good call. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Now you have to go back and watch Iron Man 2.
It's all connected.
I don't have to watch. I have to watch about 30 minutes of Iron Man 2. Just really the Howard Stark parts, the Walt Disney presenting Epcot portions of Iron Man 2.
Yeah. And then for anybody who did not realize or was confused, the young man at Tony's funeral was the child from Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
So, random callback, but...
Or one that has meaning going forward.
Maybe he's the new Iron Man.
Very possible. I mean, look, I still think that Gwyneth Paltrow does make an appearance somewhere because if anything of the Fox... Guys, all of your X-Men theories that it was going to happen at the end of this movie, I really hope that you sit back and be like, I should stop doing that. Because it was never going to happen.
No, it's too soon.
Deadpool was never going to show up. Like, that's all just a little too fan plotty thing. But anyways, if I had to put money on who would show up first, it's the Fantastic Four. Because no one cares about the previous two films, the versions of them. And that Avengers Tower is still empty.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, we'll see where that goes. There, that could definitely tie into the end of post credit in Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, we're back in Manhattan at the end of that movie, and this and that, and we'll see what happens. But man, there's so much to talk about with the film because it makes you want to talk about everything that's happened over the last decade plus,
right.
And it's too much to talk about.
Yeah, and we'll talk about more when Spider-Man comes up, I'm sure, because I'm sure that's still going to tie into stuff.
Yeah. I think emotionally, just for Peter,
Yeah.
You know, the emotional part of losing Tony will be the thing.
Yeah, not having his guiding force anymore.
Well, I mean, they have to put someone else in there, so now it's going to be... I don't know how much of a guide you want right now in this young man's life of Nick Fury, but sure.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a thing.
All right, Courtney, do you have anything else you want to talk about? Any other points you want to bring up?
I mean, not really like specific to the movie. I just kind of want to say, like, I loved being in the theater for this movie both times I saw it. The first time I saw it was Friday, so it was, you know, technically opening day, I guess. And that crowd was so hyped. There was when Kat picked up the hammer, I squealed. I full on squealed, and thank God everybody else in the theater did too, because like it came out of my body and I just couldn't stop it. And there were so many moments in that movie where I just had like visceral, like audible reactions to things, and it was just, it feels so good to be in a theater like that, yeah, where it's just a bunch of people really excited and just like ready for something like that. So I don't know. I think audiences will continue to be that way. As there's repeats like today, I went today, and there's probably some repeat people in there. It was kind of a less excited crowd, but man, there's just so many fun moments. And like you guys just talking about, you know, when everybody shows up in that last battle scene, I had chills again, just thinking about it. Like it, there's just such impactful moments in this movie. So, I mean, I think everybody should see it. I think it's awesome. It's definitely my favorite of the MCU. Mm. Yeah, I just loved it.
Awesome. Adam?
Yeah, I was in Virginia Beach and saw it with Chris Butler and his wife Kat, yeah, and their girls. Yeah. So that was a good time.
That's awesome.
Great energy in the crowd. The 3D I thought was very good, and just an overall. Yeah. The second night went to see it at Dolby Cinema. It had just as much. It's weird. Like the energy was a little lower in this crowd. It might have been what Courtney was saying, that there might have been some repeat viewers like myself in there. But, you know, they clapped at all the parts, but it just, you could tell like it was more of a subdued audience in there. But it was still a lot of fun. I had a great time going to see it one more time tomorrow. So I love this movie so much. And I'm still digesting how I feel about it with Infinity War. That's going to take a little bit more time, but I do. You have to see this. This is an event, and it's a great movie on top.
Yeah, I agree with that, Pete.
It's probably my third favorite. It's definitely in the top three of my Marvel films. It's my favorite Avengers film, as I said before, by a country mile, multiples of them. And I put a status about this a couple days ago. For all my life, honestly, there's only been one person for most of my life. There's only been one person who was in a comic book film that I felt was the ultimate epitome of what that character should be on screen, and it was Chris Reeve. And while the quality of movies for him after two are not very good, he was always the best Superman, and that's a very high thing to ever breach. I think Wolverine, Hugh Jackman, is in that class as well. But he had Logan, which is probably, well, whatever. That's like my Mount Rushmore, those two guys. But without doubt, for me personally, Evans and Robert Downey Jr. are up there. As just, they can do things with these characters again. I have no problem with that. You know, it happens all the time. There's different versions of these characters written throughout all the times that we've read comics, but they will be the epitome for these characters going forward. Evans specifically, I just cannot say how much like his performance has meant to me as a fan of the character. And Tony and Robert Downey Jr. made Tony Stark one of the most relevant characters in my life as a moviegoer, which is crazy. Because who would have thought that? Jon Favreau, because he was the one who fought for him. But that's one hell of a send-off for these guys, and cannot tell you how much it meant to me to have that final shot be that final shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. So, all right, that was our thoughts on Endgame. That was the culmination of years and years of planning and movie making, and in July, we'll get to see one last little hurrah with Peter Parker to see how he's taking Tony's fall. What's the matter? You okay?
I'm fine.
Okay.
It's a parrot talking garbage to me on my phone.
Okay. On that note.
Guys, podcasting.
Yeah. Podcasting's fun. We're going to go watch Game of Thrones in a little bit. So we're going to leave you guys here.
More Starks will die.
Aw.
All the Starks. We're going to lose at least a Stark tonight.
I hope not. Not yet, anyway. But before we go, let's do all of our call outs. So, Adam, Movie Guy 365, tell me about it. Tell me where everyone can find you.
Well, if you're interested in Blu-ray, 4K, movie news in general, all that kind of stuff, you can find me over at YouTube at MovieGuy365. I put out videos every single day over there.
Awesome. You can find us at lastgenpodcast.com. We're on Twitter at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you're on Facebook, you can join our group at Disney Magic Hour. Join our group there. Invite your friends. This week, we're going to be sharing some stuff from the group. We're going to have the 30th anniversary of Hollywood Studios on Wednesday. Pete and I will be there. But also, who else is going to be there? Miss Becky Mencken, who is our wonderful sponsor, MEI-travel.com. She and her team will help you get your family on their Disney vacations, whether you want to come join us in Disney World, head over to Disneyland, or take your cruise anywhere around the globe. Definitely head over to MEI-travel to get your vacation started there.
Can I do a shout out?
Yes.
Brooklyn! All right, we're good.
Okay. Is that it? That's
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
that's... All right, guys. We will see you all in a couple weeks. On that note, have a wonderful evening.
Bye.